Welcome to The Commercial Disco, a voyage of commercial discovery. This episode is proudly brought to you by CSIRO, Australia's National Science Agency and Innovation Catalyst. Explore the commercialization of great ideas across deep tech and science. Immerse yourself in conversations with the ambitious minds shaping Australia's unique innovation landscape. Discover their insights into what's needed to bring these remarkable ideas to life.
Hello and welcome to the Commercial Disco podcast, produced in collaboration with Australia's National Science Agency, CSIRO. I'm James Riley, Editorial Director at InnovationAus.com. And today I'm talking to Grant Dooley, Chief Executive Officer of Breakthrough Victoria. Welcome, Grant.
Yeah, thanks, James. Glad to be here.
So let's go through what Breakthrough Victoria is. It's a government business entity. It performs a kind of a market filling or a market support role, if you like. Just take us through the history of Breakthrough Victoria and where it serves that innovation ecosystem.
Yeah, look, it's a good question. You know, Breakthrough Victoria has a number of roles we play. We are not just a VC, a venture capital business, although we do invest in the market. Our mission is broader than that, and our investment mandate is broader than that. We are here to invest for impact. We're searching for breakthrough technologies and ideas that can, you know, improve the health and well-being of Victorians, solve environmental problems, create jobs, all those type of things. And we do it not just through our direct investments, but we do by also supporting the ecosystem and through other types of investments, including through things like our grant to the Jumar Incubator at the CSL headquarters, which creates wet labs to support emerging biotech, and also through things like our university innovation platform, where we're investing dollar for dollar alongside other pre-seed funds at other universities here in the state of Victoria. So those type of investments are very different to a normal VC-style investment. And they're really there to try and solve the issue that we all have in Australia, not just in Victoria, and that is we're, you know, very good at producing world-class ideas and technologies, but we have a very patchy track record in commercializing those ideas. And really, the idea for Breakthrough was based on that, was that if we are looking at the future industries for the state, if we are going to create the future prosperity for the state of Victoria, how can we use taxpayer money, obviously, to support those future industries and help them grow and scale in the state? So trying to tackle that very important issue around the commercialization, the valley of death, how do we, you know, improve those outcomes for those technologies?
Okay, let's unpick that a bit. Firstly, you have an investment mandate. You're expected to make a rate of return.
Yep, that's correct.
So just talk us through that. And then if you can, just tell me what would be a comparable fund in another state or another government or another jurisdiction?
Yeah, so we do have a rate of return, and that's because Breakthrough Victoria is an evergreen fund. And that's the reason I'm here. I mean, my background is funds management. And, you know, one of the attractions for this job when I was approached was how to use taxpayers' capital in a more capital efficient way to create longer term outcomes. And when I say longer term outcomes, a rate of return that delivers a return back to the taxpayer for his investment. Now, we know there's a role for grants, and grants play a very important role in funding a lot of the early stage proof of concept, and grant funding is something that's been used quite extensively by governments. But once those grants are spent and those technologies are developed and they go to market, there really is no benefit to the taxpayer apart from potentially the jobs and things like that, but there is no rate of return or a financial return. And the view is, well, how do we support the grant system by, at a later stage, continually investing in those companies that some of that return that is generated for the investors also returns to the public, to the taxpayer. So we have a rate of return, a target, which is 8%. We try and achieve this by doing what we call a portfolio approach. And people from a funds management background would understand this, that you invest across sectors and stages. We make some larger investments, which are more scale-ups. There's a valley of death in the scale-up space as well. That's where, how do we take successful businesses that have a product here in the state of Victoria, how do we take them globally or interstate by scaling those businesses? We also have some investments which very much are in the early stage, which is that early stage valley of death, which are obviously a lot riskier. And we know that in the space that not everything we do is going to work. But the idea is that if we invest across the portfolio of opportunities, that we get a balanced portfolio that has risks and returns that can hopefully and plan to generate that 8% for the state. In addition to all that, we're doing things which may not have as a clear path to return, that being, you know, the pre-seed funds and some of these other things like grants. So we're trying to create a balanced portfolio here of investments that in 10 years' time, and that's the idea, that in 10 years' time, Breakthrough would be able to be an evergreen fund and stand on its own two feet, having had realizations from successful investments made. just to answer the question around what other similar type, that's a really good one, because when I took the role, the first thing I did was, well, what else is out there? And at closer to the home, you've got the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, who I think have done a very good job. And we've got a very close relationship with that organisation. We've made some co-investments alongside them. And further afield, yeah, before I took this job, I was actually in Singapore. So I know the people at Temasek really well. And if you're going to look at these type of government interventions into the market and working constructively with the market, then really Temasek is an exemplar. They were set up in the 1970s with, I think, $370 odd million. Their portfolio, I think, is about nearly $500 billion. So if it's done successfully, if it's done in a very considered way, this can work. But really, it's about working constructively with the market, crowding capital in and not crowding capital out. And that's a very much a focus of how we invest. We want to invest alongside partners who have like-minded type views on what we're investing into and trying to generate the same impact and returns that we're looking for as well. So we're very much partnering with others in the market, like the CFC, Main Sequence Ventures, CSIRO's venture arm. We've done a lot of investments alongside them as well. And I see them as another really good model that we can learn from.
Okay, so 2 years in to this government-led and funded entity, you come from a private sector investment background. What are the key takeaways? What are the learnings? Because we know that other states are also looking at similar models.
The key one is, and this is critical, and that is that we can actually make investment decisions at arm's length from government. It has had its challenges. When I was successful in getting the job, I arrived. We had to create things from day one. We're setting up a business. We're like a startup ourselves. So there's the processes we had to create and then recruit the type of people I knew that would be able to join us on this journey. And they had to come from various different backgrounds, given the nature of the mandate. That all takes time. But we've been able to do things along the way with the support of some very capable people on our board. So really the key learnings for me is that arm's length from government. We have not had any pressure from government to invest in any particular projects. Every investment that we have made, including the grants, including the University Innovation Platform, has been devised, has been sourced, has been due diligence by the team, and the investment decision has been made by the business at arm's length from government. So I think that is the key one. If you're going to be successful, then it has to actually literally be a standalone entity and independent.
Okay, let me ask you this. You have a career in managing funds previously and investing. So this kind of interventionist structure or infrastructure that Victoria now has through Breakthrough Victoria, in a past life, that would have been anathema.
Sure. Depends who you speak to, though.
For yourself.
Look, my background is fairly unique. I mean, I do come from a longer time background in government, so I do understand government and process. But as you're right, for the last decade and a bit more, I've been doing funds management. And where this excited me, this opportunity, is that the mandate we had is to actually provide patient capital and long-term capital. And I know people say, well, there's all this VC money, but the truth is we've been approached by a lot of companies who can't tap into that money because of the risk appetite of VCs. And really, the commercializing technology in Australia, the reason companies go offshore is the deeper capital pools, but also the greater appetite for risk. You know, one of the questions I asked the treasurer, who's my shareholder, when I met him was, you know, some of these things aren't going to work because the very nature of what you're doing from an investment perspective in the early stage investment space is not everything is going to work. It's just the reality. But he said to me, and later on said to the board, I want you to be bold and ambitious. Your role is not to necessarily be like every other VC. It's actually to look at investing alongside like-minded parties. And I think this is where Main Sequence and the CEFC are very good partners with us. We have those same ambitions. How do we provide patient, long-term capital to support the scaling up or commercialization, scaling up of technologies, not just in Victoria, but also in Australia? And that really is the role we're playing. And that's a very different role. And it's filling a need that doesn't always exist from the local venture capital industry.
So, okay, governments do have this much greater appetite for interventionist policy. We've seen this across the world, obviously the Inflation Reduction Act, and the Prime Minister this week has announced a kind of a response to that through the Future Made in Australia Act and a bunch of initiatives under that. So I guess I'm asking, the Prime Minister painted a picture of a completely changed economic environment. The model is different. Part of it's COVID, part of it's just strategic, all of those things. So how does your fund now, 2 years in, kind of fit in with these emergent funds, NRF, various states are looking at similar models? How's it all come together? Is it one cooperative feast? What are we looking at?
Again, good question, James. One person asked me just over Christmas, actually, what does success look like for you in Breakthrough Victoria? And there's a lot of ways I could answer that. You know, successful evergreen funds, successful investments, more jobs, well-being outcomes for the Victorian people. One of the other answers is, which I also said, is Breakthrough New South Wales, Breakthrough Queensland, Breakthrough Western Australia, breakthroughs across Australia, because really these type of entities like Breakthrough have a role to play. And we're working very close to the NRF. I see us all as being co-investment partners, a bit like what we're doing with the Clean Energy Finance Corp and with Main Sequence Ventures. You know, the need for long-term patient capital is such that Breakthrough Victoria itself cannot meet that need. The NRF will have a role to play in some of that as well. And I think the more that we have government-led institutions, independent, with very good processes, investing into these markets to support homegrown Australian technologies to go global, will be a great outcome for the future industries of Australia. When I say that, we're talking about deep tech here, okay? We're talking about, you know, quantum, we're talking about AI, we're talking about some of the therapeutics and biomedical stuff. So really, the market in Australia needs more breakthroughs. They need a successful NRF to support the development of those technologies so that we can do, I think, I haven't read what the Prime Minister actually said, but, you know, making it in Australia instead of these things going offshore to be made overseas. So that, to me, and it's one of the reasons I was attracted to the role, to actually show that it can be done. And really, being judged after 2 years on this journey, it can be judged. There should be a level of accountability, transparency. I totally agree with that. But whether or not this works will be borne out over a period of longer than 2 years. And I just refer to David Burt's article in The Australian. He wrote an article about the recent criticism of Breakthrough and put forward his view that really, which is true, most people that invest in this space, these things are long dated. It's a journey. We're making decisions based on the right due diligence and the right opportunities we see in the market and the right technologies. But really, whether we're successful is going to be playing out over a period of time, not just over the last 2 years.
Yeah, there is a philosophical objection among many people just to the structure of why would a government do this. So I guess you're going to have to bide your time until you've got some proof in the pudding to hold up. I did want to ask you a couple of things about some specific investments, one of which is Cold Quanta, or Inflection, I think it's now called, a quantum company, but not an Australian company, a company that has set up now in Victoria. That is an odd one, right? You know, for an organisation like yours. Yes, it might have tipped things over the edge to bring that company to Victoria, but it's not a Breakthrough Victoria, it's an imported tech. So what's the thinking?
So our investment mandate is to deliver three things. It's to support the growth of viable breakthrough technologies in the state. It's to deliver an impact for the state, and impact broadly defined can be, it's obviously jobs, but it's also the creation of future industries. It's uplifting skills and knowledge and technologies. And the third one is to do this in a way that will generate a return for the taxpayer. So when we're looking at investments, we're not just looking at supporting, well, primarily most of our investments are in the state with Victorian companies, but we're also looking and scouting the market for where we see gaps in the ecosystem where through our investments, we can bring world-class technologies to the state to augment what is here in the ecosystem and can be scaled here in the state. And every government, every state government has an arm that does this, even the federal government. In Victoria, it's called Invest Victoria. How do we attract successful overseas companies to the state so they can set up their headquarters? And really, we work alongside Invest Victoria when we look at these opportunities. So we're actually, as a government entity, there's another role of government is to attract world-class ideas and technologies and people and businesses to the state. And through Cold Quanta, we saw an opportunity, now called Inflection, of course, where they're a leader in cold atom technology, which is quite different than when you're looking at the IBM supercomputers and quantum computers. They need to be chilled. So they're looking at cold atom technologies, which probably don't have enough time today for me to describe, but there's a very unique way of looking at quantum. And they've also got products which are in the market like quantum clocks. So the investment was, you know, Inflection have quite a large footprint now in Oxford. They're a Boulder, Colorado based company, and they were looking at setting up in Australia as part of their AUKUS, because quantum is an important area for the AUKUS relationship. And they were really looking for a home in Australia. And we said, well, if you're looking for that home, and there happened to be also a quantum physicist at Swinburne who was using their glass vials and their technology. So it just made for us, it was a nice synergy to bring that company to Swinburne where they set up their quantum technology center to really lift the understanding of cold quantum technologies and really grow that ecosystem and that knowledge base here in the state. And that's what we've done through the investment. They've been now successful in winning a couple of grants through ASCAR with the federal government. They've hired people. Jim Rabel is the CEO of Inflection Australia. He's out of CSIRO. And they're building their team. And really, we just see it as another piece of that jigsaw puzzle about building the quantum ecosystem in Victoria. Interestingly enough, our second quantum investment, which was Quantum Brilliance, there is synergies with those two companies. So it's also great that we can actually build this ecosystem and find synergies through our portfolio companies.
Okay, so you've gone through a bunch of areas where Breakthrough Victoria does invest. I think perhaps because it's fresh in mind, because it's a newer fund, but the NRF, you know, has some very specific kind of investment categories. Breakthrough Victoria aligns with those NRF categories, or it doesn't matter, you just align where you need to align and don't worry about it where you don't?
Yeah, look, there are some definite crossovers, and I've had a number of discussions with the NRF and also with the new CEO, Ivan Power. Yeah, we do see a lot of spaces and a lot of areas in which we can work together, both as co-investors, but also given the size of the NRF, which dwarfs, you know, Breakthrough Victoria, that where we've invested early and de-risked the technology or an industry, that where they can come in behind us and scale that business, particularly in the manufacturing space here in the state of Victoria. So I think we become, for the NRF, a very good source of opportunities, investment opportunities. They become, for us, a very important source of co-investment and follow-on investment into these companies. So I think there's a lot of areas in which we can, you know, work together. And I've already had nearly all my consulting work that I do with the NRF on helping them try to understand the challenges associated in setting up entities like Breakthrough Victoria and the NRF and managing some of the expectations which come with such big announcements as well.
Let me ask you this. There's stuff that I write about issues around Team Australia. When we present ourselves to the world, we like to present ourselves as Australians. The Federation doesn't always support that approach, and there is competition between states. How do you look at that? As you're independent of government, but you obviously have a mandate to the state and to the state's taxpayers. How do you work within that to present both a Victorian and Australian case?
In the end, yes, we are funded by the state of Victoria, and we forever have to have that front and centre in our mind. A lot of the things we're doing, though, and I spend some time in Canberra, not just with the NRF, but with other agencies up there, a lot of the things we're trying to do is actually very much aligned with, you know, the policies of the federal government. Because when we're looking at investing, we're trying to, hopefully, with our investments, create the basis for a future industries that will hopefully drive the future jobs growth that we will see, just not in Victoria, but any company that we invest into in Victoria, we want to take global, we want to take interstate, we want to grow across Australia. So it's not just the well-being of Victorians, but ergo, by the very nature of what we do, and if we hopefully, you know, successfully scale those companies, there'll be a positive impact for the rest of the country and ideally globally. And, you know, when you're investing into things like Navi Technologies, which are small catheters for babies, which have never been developed for, now if that works, that can be rolled out everywhere. There's babies, you know, obviously, across the whole planet. So we do see everything we're investing into as having the potential to change not only the lives of Victorians, but also the lives of other fellow Australians, but also, quite hopefully anyway, the lives of global citizens. So we do see very much working with the other states, well, working with other overseas investors. So we've got investments alongside Temasek. We've got investments alongside the other government entities from the US. So we just see the market as people that we can work with and not necessarily as competitors, although when you are playing in the market and investing in the market, of course, there is competitive capital. But one of the things we've always done, and we've made quite clear from day one, is that when we invest, we want to crowd in capital. We want to have a multiplier effect. We won't take more than a third of a round. We want to actually bring in capital alongside our investments. You know, one of the things that we've found quite pleasing is that we talk to some companies who have struggled to raise money. And then when we talk to them, they'll say, well, look, can we tell other people that Breakthrough is looking at us? And we go, yeah, sure. And as a result of that bit of a halo effect, other companies and other investors have come in alongside and we've been able to help them close around to actually, you know, to grow that company. So we do see ourselves playing a very constructive role from an investor perspective as well.
All right. I'm talking to Grant Dooley, the Chief Executive at Breakthrough Victoria. Look, I've got just a couple of other questions. I mean, you've had experience in the public sector a long time in DFAT, I think, before you launched your other career. So what's it like building a kind of a intensely private enterprise focused organization within government? If you were to warn people where they should fear the tread, what would your advice be?
Look, these things will always, particularly when it's done for the first time, you know, you're treading a new path that you hopefully, you know, you've got your machete out, you're trying to cut your way through a little bit, but But really the great thing about the Victorian government from day one is that they've actually, you know, always said, you know, we've gone public and said this is independent, you know, we're here to help, but there are certain things we need from you from a reporting perspective. One of the criticisms we've had is about our transparency, and, you know, I'd argue quite strongly that we're governed not just by the Corporations Act, but by also by acts inside government. So, you know, we'd have to be, you know, even more transparent to some regards, and that can come with its, dare I say, with its frustrations, because it does add a cost to, you know, opportunity cost to the business, but that's the way it is. It has not been as big a cost as I probably thought it was going to be, though, you know, which is, I think, from the Victorian government perspective, has been very welcomed. Probably the greatest challenge, and you'll understand this, is that we're not a fund or a business like a normal VC fund that has a carried interest structure. What keeps us here is our passion for the impact we're hoping to make of these investments. And the people I've been able to recruit all share that passion. We're not doing this because there's some big pot of gold at the end called carried interest. We're doing this because we actually believe fundamentally in what we're trying to do with the technologies that we're investing into. And quite often we talk about that internally, about the pleasure we have. When you meet, when we announced Arovax, and I met the lady who has a peanut allergy, and just how important this is for her life to be able to actually have the belief that at some point in time she'll be able to live without, you know, without the complications that come with that allergy. Through these investments, they can actually have a direct impact on their quality of life. That's when you actually go away and think, you know what, this is actually a lot more interesting, a lot more fun than just actually investing from my own back pocket.
So you mentioned before, you're only 2 years in, it's pretty early days and the proof will be in the pudding, fair way down the track. Are you up to full speed now? Is that flywheel going as hard as it's going to go, or are you still spooling up?
Yeah, so I'll just qualify that a little bit. Yeah, we produce an annual report every year and we table it in Parliament. The Victorian taxpayer, and dare I say people like yourself, James, who are interested in Breakthrough Victoria's journey, will be able to judge us on what we're doing, and every investment we make is up on our website, and we're going to, you know, I think there's improvements, and I dare say some of the observations around how we work we can improve on, and I think there is a bit more information we can put about there around the rationale for some of our investments. I think that's good advice, and we're going to be looking at doing that. We're also going to be more embracing of a lot of the parties we haven't funded and trying to understand their experiences with us. We're always on a journey of improvement. Where we are right now is that, yeah, the first 2 years was a process of building everything from scratch. These things don't come easy. We inherited a lot of process from government. We then had to turn that and twist it and shape it into what is more of a commercial type process. We'll always will have the overlay of government because of the nature of what we're doing and our reporting. But really now we have, dare I say it, after the 2 years of people, process improvement, we have our own internal audit, which identifies, you know, things we need to improve on and keep working on. So I'd argue strongly that the experience going forward in working with BV is going to be very different to what the experience was in the past. And I think one thing I did say to the NRF, and I would say to anyone else looking at creating a similar type vehicle at one of the states, is that as soon as you announce it, the expectation is there. At least get it mostly built before you kind of announce so that you can manage the expectation, because, you know, we got inundated. We've had over 1,000 applications. And really, when you're trying to build something, there was, and I would hand on heart, you know, that was the difficult part, was, you know, really trying to manage expectations. And really, we learned a lot through that process. And, you know, the committee structures, the processes in place, where we can handle things a lot quicker, we can give a quicker no, we can more clearly articulate what we're looking for and how we're looking for it. We do have a portfolio approach now, so quite a lot of the things we're now saying no to are largely because of our portfolio construction. We don't want to be overweight in any particular areas. We don't want to have greater risk in any particular areas. So it's really providing the science around portfolio construction, that overlay to running and creating a business and creating a portfolio that over time will mature and deliver that 8% return. That's the key learning for us. And we're at the point now which we can apply those learnings and those techniques to really create, I think, fingers crossed, all that type of stuff is going to be a very successful portfolio of investments.
All right. I'm going to finish on this question. I hope it doesn't sound fatuous, but let's hypothetically, I'm a startup. I've started to get some revenue. I've got some pretty interesting tech. How do I approach Breakthrough Victoria? And what do you expect from me? Like, what do I need to look like? What's my maturity need to look like? You know, what do I need in place before I approach you?
Yeah, so on our web portal, you can throw in an application. Anyone can do it anytime. So 24/7, go to our website, submit your deck. We'll look at it and then we'll get back to you. So that's the easiest way to do it. I've said to all my staff, including myself, we're all originators. Myself or any of my staff, people shouldn't feel shy. And I get a lot of emails that drop on my computer. But what we're looking for, to give more specific guidance, they've got to meet three very clear criteria. One is it has to be a breakthrough technology. We're not looking at investing in different colored widgets. It actually has to be something which in itself is a breakthrough technology or idea, okay? The second thing is it viable? I mean, is there a market for this idea? Okay, so quite often someone will have the greatest of ideas, but if there's not a market for that idea, then really the investment itself is not going to work. So is it a great idea? Is there a market? Can you show that there's a market? Do you have a go-to-market strategy? And finally, is it going to be feasible? Because of the market, because of the commercialization of that particular idea, will there be a return to the investor, being Breakthrough Tory in this case, in investing in that company? So those three things we need clearly articulated in whatever deck we get. The impact piece is specifically very important because that is the key piece for the state of Victoria. Quite often we'll be approached by a company that will say, oh, we're a New South Wales company. We intend to put a person in an office in Victoria. There we go. That's enough. Well, actually, it needs to be broader than that. When we're looking at investing into an interstate company, we need to understand and have a very clear business case as to what this does for Victorians, what it does to the state of Victoria, where's the job outcome, where is the improvement in wellbeing outcome, the lift in technology, the lift in the knowledge base around that technology if we make that investment. So the impact of Victoria, is it viable? Okay, technically, is it a breakthrough? And will it make money? They're the three things we're really looking for and need to be in a deck when we start looking at a particular company.
All right, Grant Dooley, Chief Executive of Breakthrough Victoria. I wish you all the best. If you're successful, it adds value to the rest of our community. So thank you, and thanks for being on.
And thank you, James. And I'd like to be able to come back on at some point when I can talk about some of the successful companies we've invested into. So
I'm sure we'll see you in the future.
All good. Cheers, James.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Commercial Disco Podcast, proudly brought to you by CSIRO. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you heard us. For the latest on tech, innovation, and public policy, visit innovationoz.com. And stay connected with us on social media to ask questions or suggest future guests. Until next time, this is the Commercial Disco wishing you an inspired week ahead.